Today I'm speaking with Jennifer Teske. She's the Vice President of Resource Development with United Way of Olmsted County. She's worked with a number of not-for-profits, including the Boy Scouts, the YMCA, and the Boys and Girls Club. And she's really made a wonderful career of working with these not-for-profits. And unlike some of the other guests that I've had, it wasn't a divergent path. This is something she had planned for. This is what she was educated for. And it's interesting to see how somebody can work for something that's so meaningful with some wonderful organizations. So without further ado, here's Jennifer. Today we're here with Jennifer Teske of the United Way of Olmsted County. We're going to talk about how she was able to achieve the career that she has in the not-for-profit realm, and maybe help people realize how they can get involved either professionally or in other ways in not-for-profits. Thanks for joining me, Jennifer.
No, thank you for the invite.
Jennifer, let's just start off at the beginning. Typically, I'm talking with people where they grew up, kind of elementary school, all that kind of stuff. What's your background for where you grew up?
So I think we probably have a similar background. I grew up in Hampton, Iowa, very small town, about 5,000 people. Grew up on a farm. That's where my childhood started, graduated, went to college. My background with my family right now is they still live on the farm. Mm-hmm. And my brother, who's 10 years younger than I am, runs the farm with my dad. They're serial entrepreneurs. So, they are, you know, they branched off from just, you know, crop farming to now they own a tractor repair shop, which is kind of funny because they probably got into that because their tractors were the ones that were in the shop the most.
Sure.
And they also started a snow removal business, okay, which keeps them occupied during the winter months.
Nice. Because we're going to be talking about philanthropy, did you grow up and your family was involved with not-for-profits? Were they volunteering with a number of things? Not that they necessarily had to, just wondering whether your interest was piqued really early.
They really didn't. They didn't have that example for me per se directly. You know, I was involved in a lot of activities as a youth. So I guess because I was involved and I wanted to be involved in activities, they kind of came along with me. And I suppose probably supported those causes philanthropically, but it wasn't really intentional.
Okay. Was there anything in particular that you were doing? Was it music, FFA?
Oh, gosh. I did everything. I was, you know, typical kid, started out in dance, and then I was in gymnastics, and then I was in 4-H, and then I played the clarinet in the band, and then I was cheerleader, and then I was, you know, I just, on top of each other, you know, I just was very active.
Sure. All-American, Iowa,
oh, yeah,
traditional.
I am your poster child for Iowa All-American kid.
Well, that's wonderful. So all that was happening. You had entrepreneurial farming family, lots of activities through high school. Then you decided to go to college. Where did you decide to go, and what did you decide to take, and why?
Interesting question. So I chose University of Northern Iowa. And it was because it was about an hour away, just enough distance that, you know, I could do my own thing, but enough, or, you know, a small enough distance that if I needed to go home for some support, I could.
That's a factor that I think people don't, they take into consideration while they're doing it. I think after the fact, you don't remember that how important that is. So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And what did you take in school?
So I started out in accounting, which I definitely...
Is that just because you enjoyed math?
Yeah. Yeah. I had an accounting class in high school. Really liked numbers and budgets. So I thought, you know, why not? Accounting it is.
Sure. So you say you started out in that. Is that the degree that you ended up obtaining?
No.
Okay.
No. I think probably when I got my first D slip, that was an indication that accounting was not the place that I was supposed to be.
Sure. So what did you end up graduating with then?
I graduated with a degree in, let's see. It's a degree in leisure services. So anything that you do in your leisure time, mm-hmm. I learned how to program for. I specifically chose nonprofit youth agency administration as my specialty.
Okay. So that's pretty specific and mm-hmm. ended up being what you did. So after you earned your degree, where did you start your career?
I would say my career started really with my intentionality with my internship.
Okay. So while you were in school, that was a requirement or mm-hmm. an option? Sure. Mm-hmm.
To work in a nonprofit setting.
And where was that done?
I took a huge leap, a huge risk. And I took all my grant money, all of my, you know, all of the money that I could, and I moved to Kansas City.
Which is the really big city.
Yeah.
Yeah, for somebody from a town of 5,000.
Right. But I had something in mind when I was doing that. I knew that I wanted a resume builder. I wanted to make myself stick out on a resume. I didn't want to do my internship where it was easy.
Easy would be somewhere local.
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So was it, what was going to stick out was that it was in Kansas City or the size of the organization?
So I worked for, the size of the organization was the Kansas City YMCA system.
Oh, so not a particular location. It was the entire system.
The system.
Okay. And what kinds of things were you doing there? What were you, obviously a resume builder, but what were you trying to learn?
Well, I was trying to apply what I had learned in school in a position that would give me that experience.
Okay.
So it was the first internship they had ever done. Ever.
And so you were talking about planning things, programs, and the like. Mm-hmm. Was there a development side of it at the time, or?
There was a portion of it.
Sure.
But most of the time when you start out in a nonprofit, you start on the program side.
Okay.
So the position that they actually created for me was I was doing volunteer development plans for all of the YMCAs.
Okay. So that the volunteers would have things to do when they come?
Mm-hmm. Most okay. not. So it was interesting, especially even today. I had a conversation today about how nonprofits really need volunteers, but they don't have the capacity or the knowledge of volunteer development.
How to use them effectively.
And support.
Sure.
And they just don't have the capacity to do it. They're worrying about meeting their budget for the fiscal year. They're worrying about getting program to kids. I mean, they're adding a volunteer component to it is just like bonus.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that for sure. Just thinking of things that I've volunteered at, sometimes you go with the greatest of intention and you don't know how much you've actually done for them when you left, whether they were prepared or how that all works out. So it definitely would have been appreciated to have somebody like you preparing the organization to train those volunteers properly.
Mm-hmm.
So after you were there, I expect you enjoyed that because mm-hmm. you decided to stay in the realm of not-for-profits. That happens a lot of times where people go to school with an intention of doing something,
mm-hmm.
and then after they have a little bit of experience in it, realize that that's not the direction that they want to go. This was not your experience. Mm-mm. It solidified mm-hmm. what you wanted to do?
It did.
Was it anything in particular about it?
Just the challenge. I enjoyed the challenge, and I really felt strongly about the need and supporting nonprofits.
Sure. So after you've built your resume, mm-hmm. And you did this during your internship, after you graduated, where did you go next?
Well, since I had experience in the YMCA system, it was very easy to look at YMCAs.
Sure.
In general. But I remember sending out hundreds of cover letters to hundreds of YMCAs. And then I had one YMCA that reached out to me. Little YMCA, Sioux City, Iowa.
Of the hundreds that you send out, you had one
mm-hmm.
respond.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So I had one little YMCA, Sioux City, Iowa, with big dreams.
They had big dreams. What did those entail?
Well, I was told that we were going to build a new YMCA.
Okay.
Which I think they finally did it about 25 years later.
So at the time, was it just kind of a ramshackle old building that they had, or?
Kind of kind of run down. It was on a hill. It was not ideal at all, but it was the Y of the town.
Sure.
You know, it had a wholesome feel. People liked it. They didn't know how to fundraise.
So what was your role there?
Well, I actually, like I said, you start out in program.
Right.
So I was applying for a membership director position.
Okay.
And so I came in as membership coordinator. I guess I was coordinator at that time. And started out in membership, worked with corporations to engage them, to encourage them to basically pay for Y memberships for their employees.
So it's one of the things I know was for myself, and seeing it's difficult to go out and make those asks, mm-hmm. whether you're in sales, whether you're in development, whatever area it is, especially when you're just starting out. What were those first kind of sales calls or donation requests? Do you have any good stories of how those went, or bad, or particularly bad stories?
I have lots of stories.
Sure.
Particularly, most of them were good stories. You know, everybody believed in the why.
Yep.
Your sales pitch is like, why not provide an outlet for your employees to be healthy and productive and retain your employees?
Sure.
It was kind of a no-brainer.
It's definitely positive. There's not really any controversy with associated with the YMCA. Everybody knows
mm-hmm.
kind of what they do, the programs that they have to an extent. But I just wonder, did you get pushback or things that just went way better than you ever imagined? I just think if somebody's starting out, they might think, oh, hopefully I can get $5 from somebody and says, I'm going to give you $10,000. Or
mm-hmm.
you go to somebody that you think, oh, this is a sure sale, and they run you right out of their office. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but if there's any stories that stick out like that?
Probably the biggest one was when I started to add things to my portfolio of work.
Okay.
And working out trade agreements.
Okay.
Well, so that's probably one of my most successful moments was being able to work out trade agreements and swapping memberships for services.
Oh, nice.
Which was something that hadn't been done.
Sure. What would be an example of that?
So we printed a newsletter quarterly. It was pretty spendy.
Sure.
And so I talked to the local printer and said, I'll swap you this many memberships for a free newsletter quarterly.
So a barter and trade system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was the reaction from the organization when you proposed this?
As long as we can get it for free, why not?
Sure. You look at the value of what you can receive. And what
and we had to produce that newsletter no matter what.
Right. That's...
Or catalog, I should say. It's more of a catalog.
Of the programs that mm-hmm. are happening. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've received them before. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. But that's kind of out of the box thinking,
mm-hmm.
which in the not-for-profits that I've been involved in, there needs to be out of the box thinking. What other before we get into that, maybe what other not-for-profits have you worked for since YMCA in Sioux City, Iowa? Because now we're in Rochester, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
What was the path that brought you to Rochester, and maybe some of the work stops along the way?
Boy, we need like 2 hours to do this. So back to my college experience. The program that I graduated from, actually there's an organization that was called American Humanics before, and it was like on 100 campuses. You and I just happened to be one of the campuses that American Humanics was a part of.
What is training you
to work for a nonprofit.
Okay.
So you did facility development, you did volunteer development, fundraising, I mean, everything you would need to know to be eventually an executive director for a nonprofit. That was my undergraduate coursework.
Now, does this degree exist in a lot of schools?
Not around here.
Sure.
You and I are probably the closest one.
Okay.
Which I've been trying to get interns from you and I to come here to Rochester.
Are they in high demand because there's not a lot of these schools around? Or what's been your success with that?
We're too far away.
Okay.
And you have to have someone like me that is thinking intentionally of what, you know.
Developing the next leaders coming on.
Right. Thinking, Rochester is a really up-and-coming place. I should do this.
Right.
Right? So not very many students are thinking that way. So pitching it to them, I haven't actually made it on campus for a while.
Sure.
But I still stay in contact with the director of the program. And I have been invited to be a part of a regional group and, you know, trying to, I have an 8 and a 5-year-old. I can't commit to that.
Sure.
So I still maintain contact with this group on campus.
Okay.
Of nonprofit professional wannabes. I mean, that's what they want to do.
Sure.
So there would be awesome to have that connection here with them. And just have a feeder pool. So this kind of like the nonprofit sector here would really benefit from a feeder pool. But we need to strategically develop that feeder pool.
Yeah, that sounds, it'd take cooperation among different groups that are probably feeling that they're overwhelmed with just trying to accomplish their own mission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that I got off of what you just asked me.
Yeah, we kind of got away from it.
Sorry.
That's no. This is the way that these things work. But the question was Sioux City, Iowa to Rochester. And you'd say it would be 2 hours, but kind of the Cliff Notes version of maybe a couple stops along the way of how you ended up in Rochester.
So I think the reason I was going back to that group was to point out that I was a part of a select group that other alumni of that group knew where to look. So I got recruited by an alum to then, after working for the Y in Sioux City, to work for the Boy Scouts in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
So I would have never, never in a million years thought of Boy Scouts. But because I was hand-selected and recruited because of that commonality,
mm-hmm.
and they knew what kind of qualities I had, I fell in love with Boy Scouts. So I went to Boy Scouts in the Twin Cities.
Yep.
I was a district executive. My territory was Dakota County. So you're talking Lakeville, Farmington, Rosemont, Coates, Hampton, and Prior Lake.
Okay.
I can still name them.
And your role there with Boy Scouts was to find volunteers?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, find, cultivate, lead, teach, start new packs, troops, crews, fundraise for my district. And I did well enough in the position that I got then recruited to Rochester.
Okay. And what role was that when you came to Rochester?
Development and marketing.
For?
Game Haven.
Game Haven.
Council. Boy Scouts here.
Okay. So you stayed within Boy Scouts then again. So that got us to Rochester. Let's just back up for a second. Where you say that there was the group at Northern Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And while you were going to school, was it that if you were in this particular program, you would be part of its Humanics?
It was called American Humanics. It's now called Nonprofit. Oh, gosh, I forget. They changed the name.
Sure.
It's a different name, but the same concept.
But was it something that everybody who was in this program was encouraged to go to?
Mm-hmm.
Did everybody do it? No.
No.
But you took that step. Sometimes that happens, and people don't even understand. They're thinking, oh, this makes sense because these people are like me, but the effect that it's going to have on the rest of your life from being part of an organization and making those connections,
mm-hmm.
and that's what happened with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you came to Rochester. You were working for, working with Boy Scouts,
mm-hmm.
doing that same work of training, development,
mm-hmm.
Probably found that Rochester was a fairly small community, close-knit mm-hmm. community, with a whole lot of not-for-profits,
mm-hmm.
All wanting to do really good things in the Rochester and surrounding area. What was the next step, or what was your, maybe we'll go to what was your first impression of Rochester?
I love Rochester. I mean, I just fell in love with the community as soon as I got here. And I mean, I bought a house on my second visit.
You had the job by this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy a house without a job, but.
Sure.
But I jumped. I just jumped, dived, feet first, head first, whatever you wanted to call it, and I bought.
Was this, I know for myself, I don't know that I could live in a large city. I like the size of Rochester. Being from a small town, this seems like a big city to me.
Mm-hmm.
Was it some that? Was it connections that you had made? What was it that really stood out to you that you knew that this is where you wanted to be?
Well, so my best friend from high school lived here.
It's helpful.
Helpful. It was just kind of one of those things that was meant to be. Like, I didn't even question it because it just felt right. It felt like the right next step.
Sure.
So my best friend was here, so that made it really easy. And I just felt at home here in Rochester.
Sure. You're now with the United Way. Mm-hmm. Which, with your background of working with a number of different not-for-profits, kind of allows you to see what's going on in a lot of different places. What is your role currently with the United Way, and what is it that you like best about the role that you're currently in?
So I am Vice President of Resource Development. And we raise anywhere from $4 to $5 million a year to invest back into the community to help people in need. I couldn't think of a better mission.
Sure. And then you get to be a part of the missions of some other wonderful not-for-profits.
Right. And that's really, I mean, just, I know so many other different nonprofits because, one, I studied them all in my undergraduate, and two, I've worked or volunteered for almost every one of them.
Sure.
Just by, because I had to.
Yep. What do you see? One of the things that came out last year was there was a change in the tax code, and there were a lot of not-for-profits concerned about how that would affect fundraising. That was just one concern that they have. What do you see in Rochester and greater Minnesota as the concerns that not-for-profits have, not necessarily tax-related, just anything on the horizon? What is it that that's moving the needle in this realm?
So I would say our nonprofit community is kind of stagnant. Some of us are starting to become more progressive.
Well, expand on those terms. So in Rochester, it's stagnant in terms of trying to do new things, or new things in terms of programming or ways of fundraising, or how would you?
All of it.
Okay.
All of it. So an example would be, I'm pretty sure you could probably tell me every single gala there is in town, or golf tournament.
I attend both galas and golf tournaments on a regular basis, yes.
So those are traditional fundraising outlets. I have not seen any out-of-the-box thinking on events since I've been here.
Sure.
Or engagement with donors.
Okay. You said that some are starting to get a little more progressive. Is there anything that you've found really exciting recently that people are doing? Or that any organization is doing?
Well, I'm probably a little biased.
You're well within your rights to be biased.
I think that United Way is really ahead of the curve.
So what kind of things are you guys doing?
So we're being very strategic with our communications and very timely and topically oriented to what our community needs are addressing.
So some examples of that is it traditionally there's mailers, there's radio ads, mm-hmm. TV ads. What kind of things are you doing?
So I don't know if you remember Orange Smiles last year. I don't think you guys probably participated, but there was a lot of organizations. Our Orange Smile campaign last year.
Okay.
Was particularly engaging.
What does that entail?
The concept is similar to Ice Bucket Challenge.
Okay.
We challenged people to put an orange, a sliced orange,
yep,
in their mouth and smile. And tell us what you smile boldly for.
Okay. And so is that something that went viral to some extent? And then with that, was it that it was just the recognition of the program, or was there a dollar amount associated with it, or how did it all work out?
Well, I'm sure you would agree that marketing and brand have a really hard ROI to even put your finger on.
Sure.
So that's part of the issue why I can't necessarily answer the question to what you're asking, but I would say that almost anyone that knows me asks me where my oranges are on a daily basis.
So this has continued on. There's been a wave of, and Yeah, I understand from the, so from the, you guys looked at it from a branding standpoint.
It was definitely a brand move.
Okay.
And I'd be remiss not to mention the organization that helped us do that, which is Strut Branding.
Okay. So you worked with another organization to develop the idea of the Orange Smile.
Mm-hmm. And I convinced my board and my CEO that it was worth the dollars to invest in that to build our brand.
Sure. Which I'm sure is difficult because it doesn't have a simple, clean answer as how many dollars we're going to receive back.
Mm-hmm.
And any outlay of money towards marketing and branding that you don't see an immediate or a calculable return on investment,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure is difficult. It's difficult in any business, but not for profits for sure.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a double standard when it comes to nonprofit work and in a business model for nonprofit work versus profit work.
Maybe expand on that a little bit, the double standard.
So,
as you see it as a not-for-profit professional.
So in a profit world, you put all of your money in your employees and your brand.
Sure.
In a nonprofit world, you're not supposed to spend any money.
On
and
employees.
Especially not on overhead.
Right. It's got to go to the program itself. And what do you think of those of the websites that put out the numbers that calculate how much of each dollar that goes to a particular not-for-profit? They'll break it down. I don't know all the categories, but they'll say, you know, this much towards the program, this much towards development, this much towards overhead, or anything mm-hmm. like that. What's your view of that as somebody who's working in the area?
So, there's not a watchdog group that is really, really paying attention to making sure that everyone's reporting the same way.
Okay.
You can. There is a watchdog group, and we actually have a 4-star rating with them. But not very many nonprofits. I think it's what 1/4 of all nonprofits have a rating at all with
sure.
the watchdog group.
Yep.
And we are one of those. And I don't think I've seen any other nonprofit in this community have a rating. Maybe. It just hasn't been touted, maybe, if I haven't seen it.
Okay.
So I guess what I'm saying is that each nonprofit they're not regulated on how they do that.
How they report their numbers. So it's not necessarily...
It's not necessarily apples to apples,
right.
In my mind.
Sure.
I would say working for multiple organizations... See, the organization that I'm working for currently is probably the most transparent.
So, if you're, you know, you obviously work with development and you look for donations. If somebody's looking to give some dollars to a not-for-profit,
mm-hmm.
what advice would you give them? Obviously, first and foremost, give money to the United Way, but which is you obviously believe in and you work in, but how would you advise them to assess what not-for-profits to support financially?
I guess I go back to making sure that you know what you're passionate about and aligning yourself with those organizations that support your passion. So that would be my first step.
That's not the direction I was going, but that is incredibly profound. That makes a ton of sense. Number one, that you care deeply about the, and I think, you know, most people are supporting the things that they do care about. But yeah, that's the obvious first one.
I would say that's probably my biggest pet peeve, is when people just go to an event and don't realize what they're supporting.
Why does that bother you?
Just because I believe that you should be passionate and know what you're supporting and be educated about it and make an educated decision. Just like when you vote, you should be educated on what you're voting on.
I would imagine it's one of those kind of, what you're saying is a bit of a, there's different ways of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not-for-profits want the people who are fully committed. Mm-hmm. They want them committed to the cause, to the mission. Mm-hmm. And when you go, that you know you're sitting there in support. But you also need a number of people to go to the events. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have an event and you're not-for-profit and 90% of the people really care and the other 10% don't care, but they're paying the entry to the event, mm-hmm. How do you view that?
I view it as an opportunity for the nonprofit. And many nonprofits don't have a plan to follow up.
Sure. It's the, you know, plan a whole lot, strategize for the one event, mm-hmm. that then doesn't grow into an ongoing supportive relationship.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. It's why professionals are really needed in this realm as well. I've sat on a number of boards and really appreciate the people. You get a sense for the ones who really understand the professionalism of it and learn how to work on the relationships with volunteers, board members, donors, as well as the whole mission that they're doing. You really come to appreciate it. I imagine that there'd be people who are listening that think, I would love to make this a career. What advice would you give them to really become a not-for-profit professional? They may have never even thought of it before.
Mm-hmm.
But what advice would you give somebody?
It's complicated. I would say if you're passionate about something in particular, let's say you're passionate about youth development, I would get involved. I would volunteer for the organization that fits your passion.
Sure.
Start out as a volunteer.
I would imagine as a volunteer you get to know the people who are working in that organization and, mm-hmm. and see how they got to that point as well. Mm-hmm. So just a couple questions to wrap up here. First, what would you like to promote that the United Way is doing right now?
What would I not want to promote?
Sure.
So we have, oh gosh, that is a loaded question.
Maybe just one or two things that are right on the front burner, whether it's events or ways to get to know more about the United Way. So
ways to get to know United Way. We're revamping our website, so that's really exciting. So, you know, being able to just go on our website, see what we do.
Okay.
Take a look.
And the website is?
UWOmsted.org.
UWOmsted.org. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's
go
simple
there.
Way.
That's step one.
Yep.
Step two is come to our Celebration of Caring and Giving on April 23rd.
Okay, we need to make sure that we get this podcast out right away.
Yeah.
So that they have enough time to sign up before all the tickets are gone.
And it will be sold out.
Yeah, so that's a good way to start. Question that I always ask every one of my guests, if you had a magic wand, and I don't give any specifics and it's gone in a number of different ways, if you had a magic wand and could change anything in your life, in the world, at all, what would you use that magic wand for? You could change one thing.
Boy, that is a huge question.
I should have prepped you for it a little bit better.
If I could, gosh, I would end poverty.
Which is, I believe, and I haven't been on the website recently, is part of what the United Way does.
It is, yes. That's helping people in need, which is a nice way to say people in poverty.
For sure. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. Is there anything else that you'd want to say before we wrap up?
The only other thing, and it's just I'm really excited about it, is our upcoming special event. Our only event is called Power the Purse. Both men and women and men, are invited to come to it. Obviously, it's usually a women's crowd because we are auctioning off purses there for a fundraiser. We do a silent auction. But most importantly is the keynote speaker that we bring in.
Who is the speaker this year?
Speaker is Sue Klebold.
Sounds familiar, but I'm not.
She is the mother of one of the Columbine shooters. Very heavy topic. Very timely. She is going to be speaking on advocacy for mental health, and especially, particularly, in youth.
She's done a TED Talk, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard her TED Talk before. It was fantastic. Okay, yeah, people have to get out.
Well, it's going to be phenomenal. It's so timely and something that I think more people struggle with than anyone even realizes because we just are not willing to talk about it. So people don't know.
And those are the conversations that need to be had and the kind of speakers that we need to have. So thank you very much for bringing them to town. They can find it on your website,
uwolmsted.org. This would be /POP.
Okay. So you'll be able to find it on there. Thank you very much for joining me, Jennifer, and sharing your Minnesota story.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Minnesota Stories. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if there's anybody you'd like to hear from, let us know. We would love to hear their Minnesota story as well.